It's really lovely to see you this morning. Welcome to Hartford Baptist Church. I'm Andrew, I'm the pastor here. So a specially warm welcome if you're visiting with us today. You're very welcome. And if you need anything, please see a steward and they'll be able to help you. With limits, but they'll help you nonetheless. Just a few announcements before we commence our worship today. Firstly, just to note that on Wednesday at 2:15 here in the church, there's a Thanksgiving service for the life of John Hartley. And you'll notice on the back of your notice sheet that there are two other dates for funeral services coming up, so please note those if you can. Can I remind you that on Tuesday evening, we have our church meeting. Yeah, it's even better than that, church meeting at 7:45. It would be lovely to see you. And if you normally pick up a paper copy of the agenda and minutes, the lovely Dawn, wherever she is, she's there. She has glorious paper copies for you to pick up. Hopefully you'll have received your email. Also, just to say that the February bulletin is now available. Hope you got one on the way in. But there's a few of our monthly things noted in there. And I'm thinking, is that all? That is just about all, apart from Mary Youngman. Come on, Mary, come and speak to... I know it's early, but here's Mary.
I'll deal with him later. Okay, so this year is the 25th anniversary of town twinning between Hartford, Wildeshausen in Germany, and Evron in France. And moreover, Wildeshausen as a town will be 750 years old this year. No babies from the later. So this twinning is had a huge celebration for the May Bank Holiday weekend at the end of May. So on the Friday, there will be an official ceremony between all the civic authorities and a party in the evening. On the Sunday, the Guildfest, which is the shooting company, will have a big parade and festival in town, and food, apparently, in the evening. And on Sunday, there will be a huge firework display later in the day over the lake to celebrate Pentecost. So a busy weekend full of fun. Now, an amazing weekend has been planned, and we as a fellowship are invited to send 8 guests. As you can imagine, the team in Wildeshausen are quite busy, so our usual lorry load of guests going is more than they can handle. But there is an opportunity for 8 of you to go and join in all of this fun. Now, this is a one-off opportunity, because the next one will probably be another 25 years. Okay? So, the other ones, you can wait. The rest of us perhaps need to go on this one. If you want more info, talk to me or talk to me. Cheers, thank you. Well, good morning, everybody.
Is taken from Joshua chapter 8 and verses 1 to 18, and then verses 30 to 35. And it's page 212 in the Old Testament section of the Bible. And it's headed AI Destroyed. Then the Lord said to Joshua, "Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged. Take the whole army with you and go up and attack Ai. For I have delivered into your hands the king of Ai, his people, his city, and his land. You shall do to Ai and its king as you did to Jericho and its king, except that you may carry off all their plunder and livestock for yourselves. Set an ambush behind the city." So Joshua said, and the whole army moved out to attack Ai. He chose 30,000 of his best fighting men and sent them out at night with these orders. Listen carefully. You are to get an ambush behind the city. Don't go very far from it. All of you be on the alert. And all those with me will advance on the city. And when the men come out against you, as they did before, we will flee from them. They will pursue us until we have lured them away from the city. For they will say, they are running away from us as they did before. So when we flee from them, you are to rise up from the ambush and take the city. The Lord your God will give it into your hand. When you have taken the city, set it on fire. Do what the Lord has commanded. See to it you have my orders. Then Joshua sent them off, and they went to the place of ambush and lay in wait between Bethel and Ai, to the west of Ai. But Joshua spent that night with the people. Early the next morning, Joshua mustered his army, and he and the leaders of Israel marched before them to Ai. The entire force that was with him marched up and approached the city and arrived in front of it. They set up camp north of Ai, with the valley between them and the city. Joshua had taken about 5,000 men and set them to ambush between Bethel and Ai, to the west of the city. So the soldiers took up their positions, and the main camp to the north of the city and the ambush to the west of it. That night, Joshua went into the valley. When the king of Ai saw this, he and all the men of the city hurried out early in the morning to meet Israel in battle at a certain place overlooking the Arabah. But he did not know that an ambush had been set against him behind the city. Joshua and all Israel let themselves be driven back before them, and they fled towards the wilderness. All the men of Ai were called in to pursue them, and they pursued Joshua and were lured away from the city. Not a man remained in Ai or Bethel who did not go after Israel. They left the city open and went in pursuit of Israel. Then the Lord said to Joshua, "Hold out towards Ai the javelin that is in your hand, for into your hand I will deliver the city." So Joshua held out towards the city the javelin that was in his hand. And then we move to verse 30. Find it. Then Joshua built on Mount Ebal an altar to the Lord, the God of Israel, as Moses, the servant of the Lord, had commanded the Israelites. He built it according to what was written in the book of the law of Moses, an altar of uncut stones on which no iron tool can be used. Or on it they offered to the Lord burnt offerings and sacrificial fellowship offerings. There, in the presence of the Israelites, Joshua copied on stones the law of Moses, which he had written. All the Israelites, with their elders, officials, and Judges, we're standing on both sides of the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord, facing the Levitical priests who carried it, both the foreigners living among them and the natives born there. Half of the people stood in front of Mount Gerizim and half of them in front of Mount Ehal, as Moses, the servant of the Lord, had formerly commanded when he gave instructions to bless the people of Israel. Thanks be to God.
Thank you, Rosemary, and well done, everyone, for enduring. It's not quite enduring, but for listening to that narrative. One of the things about preaching Old Testament narrative is that on the whole we can be fairly unfamiliar with some of the happenings that are going on in these stories. So it's good to hear these stories and to then reflect on them in just a few moments. Just before I get started, I just want to say a God bless you to Solange. She's up at the back there. Give us a wave, Solange. Solange is going to be away for a few months, and want to pray blessing on her as she goes. So go well, Solange, and blessings to your family as you spend time with them. God bless you. So here we are in Joshua chapter 8. We've done a few different chapters here and there so far, trying to build up this picture. Now, one of the things about me that I like to do is, as I'm a bit of a journal keeper, not as in Dear Diary, but I'm just sort of sitting down every now and again and reflect on life and its blessings and its miserable failures, of which there are many. And I've got a fairly robust set of journals, which go back to 2013, which is when I started journaling in earnest, as in, you know, sort of 3 or 4 times a week and a bit more concerted. And at the beginning of the year, I was putting one journal away and getting one new one ready, I thought, oh, I've nothing else to do. I will cheer myself up with having a flick through some of my journals. Oh, my goodness. What a litany of miserable failure and trying again and again and again. Just taking 2 steps forward with a particular thing and then 5 steps back and then maybe even 6 steps forward. And it's like, yeah, I've managed to do it. And then, you know, it's like I had never been born and it's back to misery and woe. And I don't know if it's just me or if you recognize anything of that pattern in your life. You know, you make great progress and you think that's great. I've been looking forward to getting to this place. And then all of a sudden, something happens and you're back to square one. It's like sometimes what happens on a Sunday. You think, well, I've had a miserable week and I've been horrible to absolutely everyone I love. I'm going to go and lay it all before the Lord. I'm going to receive all his joy and it's going to be a glorious week. And then it gets to Monday morning and you wake up and every blessing that you have received in the glorious assembly on a Sunday morning has somehow seeped through your toes, and you're as miserable as sin. Isn't that right? You should try and come into the church office on a Monday morning, miserable as sin, the whole lot of us. No, we're not really. But you all know what it's like to try and pick yourself up after not just small mistakes or challenges, but sometimes the serious things in life. And as we come into this passage today, remember we are dealing with Joshua and a people who have just had a huge, huge setback and defeat. Remember what happened last week? We had them attacking Ai for the first time, but it went drastically wrong because Achan had stolen a little bit of stuff for himself. He saw some fancy robes and some gold and silver and thought, I'll have some of that. I'll have some of that. And the consequence of that was that the whole nation went about their business, but with what you call sin in the camp, and it didn't work. The second part of that is that Joshua, the leader of this august people, went into battle without having inquired of the Lord. So there was a sin of commission and a sin of omission. Do you remember that last week? We talked about that? Yeah. So that's the scenario. And here we have it. They've dealt with the sin. Poor Achan and his family, they are no more. They've got themselves into a right place, but here they have to go and do it all again. Put self-confidence and pride behind them, put the miserable failure behind them, and come before the Lord to learn God's instruction for today. You'll heard of Henry Ford. He makes cars. Remember that guy, Henry Ford? He's dead now. But he said some interesting things. And he said, failure is simply the opportunity to begin again, this time more intelligently. Failure is simply the opportunity to begin again, but this time more intelligently. In other words, you're a bit stupid if you do the same thing again and again and again and somehow expect different results. Have you ever done that? You think of situations in your life when you've done that. Here we are. The people of Israel and Joshua need some encouragement because we're about to move into the battle of Ai, take two. It's time to move forward. And the passage begins with a word of encouragement. Did you hear that? Look at verse 1. In my version it says, "And the Lord said to Joshua, do not fear and do not be dismayed." Do not fear and do not be dismayed. When is the time that you need to hear that the most? When you're facing the battle of discouragement. And sometimes, you know, when you hear that, you don't just need to hear it once. You need to hear it again and again and again. Isn't it hard to just pick yourself up sometimes? And these people have confronted their own sin and they've confronted their own pride. And the word of the Lord comes to them. And God doesn't say, well, just remember, you made a terrible muck-up the last time you did this. And I'm going to be watching you this time because if you do it again, the consequences are even going to be bigger than they were before. Is that what God sounds like to you in your life? When you have to do it again, is that the voice that you hear? I want to suggest to you that's maybe not the voice of the Lord your God. Because he comes to the people in this situation when there's every cause to give them some stick and says, do not fear. Do not be dismayed. Joshua will be feeling the depths of the consequences of his mistake. He needs this encouragement after his crushing defeat. It's very easy to give in to discouragement. It's very easy to give in to discouragement, and I am the king of giving in to discouragement. It can be the tiniest thing, and I'm like, woe is me, it's all terrible. Have you seen Eeyore on Winnie the Pooh? Eeyore and I, we are soulmates. Monday morning. Come and join us on Monday morning. The corporate groans in the church. Oh, here we go again. I'm the king of giving in to discouragement. And the thing about discouragement is that when it gets into our minds and when it gets into our hearts, when it gets into our thinking, it can become our currency. Do you remember a few weeks ago I was speaking about how the fact that the currency of the Israelites had been groaning and complaining? It would be very easy at this time for their currency of conversation to become devastating discouragement. It's very easy to do. To defeat discouragement, these people simply had to get themselves into a place where they could hear the word of the Lord. You see, this time, Joshua had got himself into a place, having learned the mistakes of the past, where he got himself before God and sought to listen. I don't know if this is news to you. It might be news to some of you, but you will make mistakes. Before this hour is out, you will probably make a mistake. Afterwards, in coffee, You'll have a conversation. I prophesy this. You'll have a conversation and somebody will be offended. You'll hurt someone to the core because we're all a bit sensitive. Or you'll walk past. I've walked past someone this morning and she was really upset. I'm really sorry. Didn't see you. We do it all the time, whether we mean it or whether we don't. And as humans, this is how our experience is. But you know something? We do need to be able to find that place of saying, okay, that wasn't good. But I pick myself up and I move on. And it takes a great amount of humility to recognize that you're wrong, doesn't it? Isn't it? We're all quite good at celebrating when we get it right, but when we get it wrong, we can be stubborn. I'm looking at you, Tim. Just because you caught my eye, not because I think you're stubborn at all, but, you know, we all get ourselves into that place. Experience tells us, well, if I try that again, it's just going to be as bad. If I go and try and have that same conversation with that person again, it's just going to go as terrible as it did the last time. Or if I deal with this particular situation in work, it failed miserably the next time, but it's going to be the same. And you go into it sort of half-hearted and recognizing it's going to be terrible. This is the human condition, and it's exactly the same place where these people were. They could have, in that moment, said, AI is the bridge too far. Look what happened to us last time. We thought we had this clinched, but we were sent running. I think we all have that choice. Will we continue to live in the place of defeat based on our past experiences? Or will we get ourselves into a place where we'll hear God again and say, God, I'm going to trust you in that. I'm going to trust you in that. And more than just encouraging them, the next thing God says to them, I think it's in verse 2. He says, not only am I encouraging you, but actually, this time round, when you go and take the city, there will be reward. There will be blessing. First time round, in Jericho, you took the stuff, and it didn't go right because of that. But this time, you can take off whatever you need. And think of poor Achan. If he had just waited and listen to the instructions of God, within the space of maybe even a week, instead of having received the punishment that he got for having taken the few devoted things, he could have gone into that situation with his people and taken for himself riches and blessing. Isn't that sometimes the deception of sin? We do things and we get things for ourselves in the here and now, not recognizing that restraint and holding off and listening to God means that we can receive greater blessing. God has more for us down the line, and do you need to hear that this morning? The times when you grab for yourself and you want for yourself and you think, this is all I need, this is all I want. But actually, just down the line, God has got something else for you. We need to hear that encouragement. And what a graceful God we have, who in spite of our waywardness and our sin, is sure to forgive us and then restores the blessings of covenant to us. Isn't that gracious and generous? And I think to myself, God, I'm not good enough. I'm really not good enough for that. And God says, no, but Jesus was good enough. And you stand in him, you stand in his royal line, you stand in his blessing, and God longs to bless. So they needed the encouragement before they went out. But as I've said a few times before, it's not just enough to hear the word of the Lord, you then have to go and do it. Remember I said that a few weeks ago? You know, they've got the instructions here. They then had to step out and actually do the things. And here's the scenario this time. Remember Jericho a few weeks ago? We talked about Jericho, trumpets, you know, worship band right at the front, Ark of the Covenant, priests, all that business walking around there. That was the strategy for Jericho, and we thought to ourselves, well, that's not the strategy I would choose, but that was the strategy that God gave them for Jericho. Then we've got the situation where they didn't listen for God's instruction, and they went in, and it was a total blunder. Then, now, they're in a situation where they hear God's instruction, and do you know what? There's no trumpets in sight. Isn't that disappointing? As a brass player, personally disappointed. No trumpets involved in the Battle of Ai, second time round. No, the priests were there, but they were doing something completely different. They weren't just sort of going up, marching around all together, and then doing the thing, the walls come down. No, this time they were splitting their forces. There was an ambush involved. Completely, completely different strategy, because it was a completely new city. And they had history with this people, so they started to use the weakness of the situation to their advantage. They were in a new city. They faced a different kind of walls. They faced a different challenge. And so they had to use a different strategy. And isn't that the most challenging, or one of the most challenging things of human existence? Recognizing that we may have to change something. That we may have to change something. The results that we're getting now in whatever sphere of life, the results that we get now are related to the kind of effort that we're putting in. You know, our life is as it is now because of the things that we're doing. And if things are going to change, to get different results, you have to do different things. I mean, I'm not a scientist. I'm not a scientist at all. But I remember, you know, sort of at school doing all those, you know, those experiments where you tried to burn the school down. Remember those? Bunsen burners, aren't they the greatest invention, whatever? And who can remember the smell of singed hair? Yeah? The smell of singed hair from school. And you learn at that very early stage in your education that, you know, when you do certain things, there are certain reactions that are produced. And then remember how you had to sit down and write all that stuff up? You know, when I did this and this, this was the result. And then when I did this and this and this and changed that, well, this was the result. And I'm looking at Karina, because you must do this for a living, Karina. There's science and stuff. I'm sure it's very interesting. Yeah, but the basic principle, if you're going to get different results, you have to do different things. The Israelites were learning this. God had a different strategy, a different plan of attack. He had a different way to go about tackling Ai this time. And the people, still reeling from the defeat, then had to exercise faith that this different way of doing things was something that was coming from God and that God would deliver on it. You probably need to hear that for your own lives. You're probably going to have to do something different. You're maybe going to have to look at the Bible a different way. You're maybe going to have to try a different way of having a conversation with that person, a different tack in that relationship. As a church, if we want to move forward, we're maybe going to have to do things in a different way in order to accomplish the mission that God has for us. But the important thing is to hear the word of the Lord and enact to go forward. We keep things alive because we've always done it. I don't know if you've heard of the story of the young lady who left home, got married, and was living with her husband. They had children. And every Christmas, you know that Christmas, I've mentioned Christmas, and it's only January. But every Christmas, they would come to the place where they would make Christmas dinner. And the husband would watch carefully as every year, the woman would take the turkey and she would cut off the bottom third and just turn it to the side in the pan in the tray before they would put it in the oven to the roast. And the husband watched this one year, the next year, and the third year, this curious practice, till he plucked up the courage, because sometimes you have to pluck up the courage to ask these questions. Dear, why do you take the bottom third off the turkey and turn it round and put it in the oven? Well, she said, well, it's because that's what my mother did. It's because that's what my... And he said to her, do you have any reason as to why your mother did that? And she said, no, I have no idea why she did that. So she got on the phone to her mother. Mother, I've observed all the way through my life that you would take the bottom third off the turkey and turn it around and put it in the oven. Is there any particular reason why you do it? Does it make it taste better? Does it bring the meat to a better sort of juicy quality? Oh, no, dear. It's just because if it didn't do that, it wouldn't fit in the oven. And we get ourselves, it was funnier than that. Maybe not. But we get ourselves into patterns of doing stuff because someone did it at some point, and we lose the capacity to ask the question, why are we doing it like that? Why are we doing it that? And we don't question, and so we don't find ourselves able to move forward. I think that's true in our own lives. I think it's true in any situation you might find yourself. It's certainly true in churches. I mean, think about some of the things we do, and then you think, why on earth would anyone in a serious mind think about doing that? And you'll all have your own thing. You'll all have your own thing. But the important thing is, more seriously, to get into the place where we're saying, God, what is it that you want us to do for this battle? And will we have the courage to recognize that sometimes it takes a different strategy to produce different results in a different era, in a different time, if we're to set about the things that God would have us do? It's one of the most challenging things. And then when you step out on that, there's then the case where you have to stick at it. You have to stick at it. Endurance. Doesn't even the word just fill you with dread? We tend to think of endurance as all those things we have to put up with. Those like children leaving lights on absolutely everywhere in the house. I can come into the house maybe after a meeting in the evening, and I would go and step into the house, and I can switch off 7 light switches before I get to the living room. And then I won't tell you how many switches and lights are on in the living room. And I've been enduring this for years, the same thing. We are not good at endurance, putting up with things. And in this passage, they had to put out their faith and trust. And it comes in the form of a very strange little practice. Do you remember when Rosemary was reading the weird bit about the javelin? Do you remember the javelin bit? And did anyone think, what on earth is he doing with that javelin? Well, as they are about to go into this battle, as they're about to enact this new plan that God has for them, Joshua's job as the illustrious leader is to stand with his javelin in the air. And he's standing there. Through this whole battle, he's standing there with this javelin in the air. Have you ever tried to hold something in the air for a long time? Soon your arm starts to ache a little bit, and then your muscles start to sort of turn into solid stone. And then after a while, you can't actually move your arm because it's stuck in place and your shoulder's stuck in it. And it's a real feat of endurance to hold something up for that long. But we're told that as long as Joshua has this javelin in the air, so the battle goes on. So the battle continues and the plan starts to work. And you see, this is an instruction. This is an instruction that God has given to Joshua to hold the javelin in the air. And so, being an obedient follower of God, Joshua has to stand there with this javelin in the air. And my arm's killing me at the moment. You know, I'm not going to put it down. But he has to endure in order for the battle on the ground to be won. And weirdly, this is something that God has done before. And Joshua knows this because Joshua was there. There's a time further back in the story when they're in the desert and they have to go up against the Amalekites. And old Moses is there on the hillside. And as long as he was holding his hands up before the Lord, everything on the ground was doing fine. But when Moses grew tired and his arms started to lower, the further his arms would lower, so the battle would start to be lost. And so eventually, Aaron and Hur had to come, had to come and hold up his arms. So they're on side on the other, and they're holding up Moses' arms, and then they get, Moses' old legs are getting tired. Anyone got old tired legs this morning? Oh. They had to get a rock, and Moses would sit there on the rock with his arms held up, supported by men on the other side. And as long as he was able to endure, so the battle went on. There's something here about endurance. about holding out that hand. It's a symbol. It's a symbol of faith and choosing to trust God and saying, God, I will hold out for you. I will follow your instruction. And it's difficult and it's hard, but it's your instruction and I will endure. That faith of holding out for God. Think of that other time when Moses was commanded to hold out his staff over something. What was it? The Red Sea. Hold out your staff over the Red Sea and the waters will part. It took endurance. It took perseverance. It took obedience to step out and say, I'm going to trust in you, God. I'm going to trust in you, God. I'm going to trust in you through this battle, through this storm, through this river, through whatever it is, I'm going to trust in you because you have commanded, because you are faithful. You will do it, and I am your obedient service. You have to get that faith muscle exercised, especially in the face of change, of discouragement, in trying to pick yourself up the floor. It's that faith then becomes a muscle that we exercise. And it's not in ourselves, but it's in God who commanded, who called, who trusts. God, I will hold on to you. Is there something in your life where you need to be able to say, God, I can do nothing else, but I can hold on to you. I can hold on to you. And while that faith was in place, so they were able to reap the benefits of that. New times, new strategies, faith, trusting in God's promises. I'm coming into land, isn't that great? You've endured well, you've endured well. But finally, there's some beautiful stuff that happens towards the end, which, when read, not because Rosemary read it particularly bad, but because it's just a weird bit of the story. So once they've done the whole get into AI thing, there's some weird blood sacrifices go on, because this is the people of Israel, and that's the kind of thing that we do. I particularly like the rendition in the NIV where, at the end of this battle, they had fellowship sacrifices. And I'm looking around and thinking, I wonder who we can sacrifice this week. Anyone, any willing volunteers? I've got a list. But in this place where they have to do these sacrifices. Now, this little picture in the background isn't just a nice random picture. This is actually the desert, and it's the two mountains on either side. That's Gerizim on the left there. Another one's Ebal. Okay, and this is, and that little town in the middle, although that's a modern picture, that's where AI was. That's AI. And this is where it is. You know, real life pictures. Are you not impressed this morning? Oh, you can visualize it. But here they are, these two mountains facing each other, this valley in the middle, and that is where the town was. And we see that this victory was already prophesied by God. Moses knew about it, and Moses says, when you get to this place, this is what you're to do. These are the offerings you're to give. These are the blessings you're to pray. This is what you must do when God delivers this promise into your hands. So dutiful Joshua recognizes this, and he gets them to stand on either side of the mountain. The priests are in the bottom with the Ark of the Covenant, which is where they kept, you know, Ten Commandments, manna, all that sort of stuff. And they go about this sort of weird ritual. And Joshua gets them to read out on Mount Ebal the curses of the law. You'll know that in the law there are blessings if you obey it. Yeah. And there are curses if you disobey it. Blessings if you obey it, curses if you disobey it. And we read that they go on to Mount Ebal and they read out the cursings. And it's there that they perform the burnt offerings and the peace offerings. They knew in their heart of hearts, in their minds, in their knower, and through the instruction of God, that in order for the curse of disobedience to be reversed, blood had to be shed. Blood had to be shed. And so the culmination of stepping forward in faith, taking this new step of cementing all that God was going to do, of stepping into the destiny that God had called them to, there had to be this process of cleansing and redemption. Does that sound familiar? to you? Galatians 3, verse 13. Christ redeemed us